A lot of Americans make fun of us that we are using polyester. Like they think like we are dumb and we're like lost in time. Feel free to think that, but like our gyms work pretty well and the setting still works pretty well and we don't destroy our polyester holds.
You can use slab to level the playing field. Like a local Londoner and Toby could have a similar experience on a really hard slab. Comps are really exclusive. They're only for the top 1 or 2% of people. It's better to give back to the 99%.
I think for the Bern World Championship, when they were setting like almost like 18 days in a row, they got like 180 or maybe 200 euros a day. So basically nothing.
Welcome to another episode of the That's Not World Climbing podcast. I'm your host, Jenny, and I'm excited to introduce my two guests for today, Nicholas Vishman and Jake Mason. Nikki and Jake are route setters from Another Setting podcast, which is the name of their podcast. But you may already be familiar with them because Nikki was my first ever podcast guest, and you're probably familiar with Jake from the Bouldering Bobats. In this episode, we absolutely trash U.S. gym hold selection and setting. They give their opinions on worldwide setting styles, comp formats, and moves to leave behind in 2024. And we discuss freelance versus World Cup route setter pay. This was a super fun conversation full of hot takes, so I hope you enjoy this episode with Nikki and Jake. I'm excited to announce my new sponsor helping make this podcast episode possible, Mad Rock Climbing. I got fitted with their brand new line of high performance shoes, the D2.1s. They just came out December 6th, but you might notice a few of your favorite GOM climbers are already wearing them, like Oscar Beaudran from Team Canada, and also me. This is the first time I've gotten to wear their shoes for an extended period of time, and I'm actually super impressed with the grip of their in-house rubber, and of course, the famous drone heel that everyone says is the cheat code to heel hooking small edges. Feel free to message me if you have any questions about the shoes or sizing, and you can use the discount code NOTREALCLIMBER for 10% off your entire Mad Rock order. Info will be in the description. Back to the show.
This is like a truly global podcast.
Yeah, everyone's really far.
Sydney, London, and San Diego? Where are you?
Yeah.
Wait, where does it say Sydney? I'm in Tasmania.
Oh, sorry. Hobart.
Where even is Tasmania?
Yeah, it's like below Australia. It's not New Zealand yet, but it's like close to, not the South Pole, but it's like it's pretty good here.
What are you doing there?
Visiting vineyards, hiking. I survived a 22K hike 2 days ago. My friends always take me hiking here because they live in Brisbane, which is like, it's like 36 up now, like 36 degree. So it's like just baking and melting. So we go down here, visiting vineyards, hiking, running.
Yeah, I've never been to the Southern Hemisphere. I don't know what it would be like to experience summer in December, Christmas.
Yeah, I don't know. For us Europeans, it's like, I used to live here, so I like it. And I have like friends here, so it's like really easy.
From my experience, it's very insecty. If you don't like insects, don't go to the Southern Hemisphere in summer.
Like the massive spiders or?
Well, I don't know. I don't know about Australia, but in New Zealand in January and February is like so many insects. It's crazy. Horrible. Woo. Big ones.
Ooh, okay. I'll stay here. That's fine. How are your holidays?
Chill. Really chill.
No plans for New Year's? New Year's resolutions?
House party tomorrow. No resolutions there. What about you?
I shouldn't have asked because I don't have resolutions either. Probably stretching, actually. Stretching. I should be stretching more. What?
Yeah, resolution. Yeah, no, it's fair. It's a fair one.
It's a good resolution.
Like, don't believe I can do it already? You're already doubting?
Who can do it?
Yeah. Stretching is, yeah. Every day. Stretching
it's just
every day.
So, it's just so boring.
Yeah,
stretching
sucks.
Is so boring. It'd be like, It's like the most valuable thing, probably, and the easiest thing to do, but it's just so boring. Do you have a New Year's resolution, Nikki? Do you ever?
Just stay alive. Make it another year.
Maybe we should all try stretching.
No.
Okay.
Not doing it. It's no point.
All right. I guess I'm alone on that. What about like travel goals for 2025?
I feel like I should travel less. I don't think I don't think that will happen, but I think for the environment, I should travel less. I did 21 flights this year. Yeah. It's more than I've ever done. It's super bad. But I would do it again.
Yeah. Should probably do the same, say the same. But yeah, I already get a lot of stuff lined up. So kind of feel bad about it. But on the other hand, nah, fuck it. I love traveling.
Yeah, but it's work, isn't it?
That's it. I never do anything for fun or leisure. It's always work.
Okay, so yeah, let's talk about work then, I guess, because that's exciting. We'll just get right into it. How did you both get into climbing and route setting? I mean, I guess, Nikki, we kind of heard from you the first ever episode of the podcast, but you can give another brief explanation.
My parents were climbers, and my dad started climbing early, so I never had the chance to get around it. They also ran a climbing gym, and that's how I started climbing as a kid when I learned walking. And that's also how I got into route setting, because they ran a gym, and sooner or later I was supposed to, like, asked to help stripping, and then I was also allowed to put some holes on the wall, and I never stopped. And I'm still climbing, setting. Yeah.
Well, you did kind of stop for a little bit, but okay.
Yeah. But like,
did you stop for a little bit?
Yeah, climbing. I stopped climbing from time to time when I was a little teenager.
Oh, yeah. When you start skating.
Yeah, I will plug the first episode ever of the podcast. And for anyone who wants to hear more of his story, check out the first episode. It's probably really bad. Thanks for sitting through that one.
It's probably really bad. Thank you.
No, from my side, I think you did great.
But Nikki was a great guest.
Yeah, you were a great guest. I probably could have improved.
Don't worry. I think it was a great burn.
Yeah, thanks. All right, Jake, what about you?
Yeah, I was always interested in the mountains from a young age. Like in my teens, I spent a lot of time walking in the hills and eventually found my way onto climbing on ropes on gritstone, like trad climbing, and then I did some sport climbing, and then I was lucky enough to find bouldering in maybe 2012. Found bouldering and realized it's the best form of climbing. And then I moved to London, started working in the climbing wall, the arch climbing wall. That was 2014, and then quickly found my little pathway into route setting via the traditional route, you know, like you work on reception and then you speak to the head setter and then you do some washing, you do some stripping, whatever. That was my way in. It's been sort of a 10-year organic growth from there.
So yeah, you didn't like grow up climbing like Nikki.
No, I didn't grow up climbing, but I did I've done lots of sports in my life, so I was like primed and ready to become a boulderer at the age of, you know, 20, 21, 22, something like that.
Yeah, you also have like the physique to be like an athlete. Like I'm just a leak, but Jake is like, he has muscles, he can jump.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, I got lucky with the genetics. I've got really long arms. It's kind of helpful.
Oh, you have a big plus.
Yeah. I don't know what it is, but it's definitely plus.
So then how did you two meet and become kind of like a duo or like a bromance type of thing?
When did the bromance start, though, really? We met in 2017.
Yeah, I was invited to the Arch in 2016 for a three-day workshop. And they told me that one of their setters was missing out because he was in the forest doing... what did you do? Like this jump thingy? Rainbow Rocket.
Was I in Font?
Yeah, you were in Font.
Oh, yeah. I was on holiday.
Yeah, he was on holiday. And in 2017, when I moved to London in July, I think that's when we met.
Yeah, and Nikki did like a residency, and we have a similar feeling about climbing, a similar like approach to climbing. So we gelled, and since then we've been hanging out and teaching people how to do cool moves and route set and whatever, lots of things. It kind of blossomed naturally.
Blossomed naturally, and we do a lot of stuff in private life. We just get along like pretty well. Yeah.
Now we do lots of work together through Climb Holds, the hold manufacturer in Slovenia.
Yeah, but it's not only work, Jake. I think we should put it out here. Like, work should be ready. We are also friends in private life.
you're the silly one. I'm the serious one. I like I like work. I like structure. Nikki's kind of like floofy.
What do you mean? What do you mean I'm floofy?
You're the silly one. You have a very relaxed approach to life, and I'm like, I feel like I'm the strict one who needs to know all the information now. And if it's not perfect, I struggle.
Yeah, for German, I'm pretty free.
Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Still, I guess, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, clearly you both have traveled around a lot. In terms of like work and setting, what are some of the setting trends you've seen in all the different countries you've worked in?
Wow, it's super diverse. Wow. I mean, there are like like China and Japan seem kind of similar in that they have small walls, dense setting. And then there's like in Germany, when I think Germany, I think like vast open spaces with lots of accessible lines. And then I think UK is like still kind of old school, grotty, like ratty climbing, but that's changing. And then in America, I think even bigger warehouses with like loads of easy boulders and loads of super powerful boulders. Wow, I'm sure there's many, many more examples. You could go down a long rabbit hole. Like the French have a really, really techie style, like really comp oriented style in France.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's like a trend. Like a trend would be, that's the thing. Like a trend would be something like what happens over time and floats from left to right or whatsoever. But I feel like a lot of different countries find their different identities or like different styles, what they do.
Okay.
And this is like mainly due to the limitations of their space or whether they can get material as easily as in Europe. Like in, that's the thing, like UK and mainland of Europe. I think I went to the trade show in November, a friend of mine, he told me there are nowadays like 410 or 405 like hold companies. And 200 of them started in the last 5 years, and it feels like this could be right. Like he's pretty detailed and knowledgeable, like pretty geeky about this stuff. And in Europe, like you get all the stuff plus, like so, like the development of stuff just happens a little bit faster. While we still have like other big warehouses or like smaller condensed spaces and like a lot of like different identities already. UK, Germany, France feels entirely different. The Dutch feel different as well with their gyms. But some other areas like China, for example, they have to deal with 80% Chinese brands because they cannot import a lot of stuff. And then they cannot, I think they told us that the rental contracts are like up to 5 years. So they cannot build like really, really lush, huge gyms because they need to get the money back like as fast as possible for their starting invest. And then they go the Japanese way to just like put a lot of boulders into one space. And they found like, I think there was Japanese smartness, like if they have like one hold, one huge fiberglass macro in one color, which is designed only for one climb, they just put another color jib on it to make it available like a plywood volume also for other climbs. So they're really good at maximizing the utility of each and every single hold, while the gyms itself don't look as nice as we try to in Europe, I think, from time to time. So they follow Japan a little bit in China, Singapore as well, or like a lot of like Asian countries, I think. And then Australia has a little bit of a mix between Europe, America, and Asia. But yeah, I think that's just like how I feel it is around the world. And I climbed only in a few gyms in the United States. How many did you climb it, Jake?
Well, two or three, not many.
Total, like in your life?
Yeah, like three, I think. Cliffs. Yeah. Where did I go to in San Francisco? Dog Patch. and one more in Vegas I went to.
Oh, you went to one in Vegas.
Oh, I can't remember what it was. Ages ago, like 5 years ago.
Did the Vegas have pokies in it?
Pokies? What's pokies?
Like the
oh, like
thingies.
Headboard.
Yeah. No. Here, like where you can put money in and become a millionaire. Like the
oh no,
the gambling machines. Oh no.
No. God, sorry, that took me too long. It should do though. Maybe those laws only apply to the strip. I don't know.
No, it doesn't. I lived in Vegas. You have like slot machines in like gas stations and grocery stores.
Wow, yeah. They should totally put them in climbing walls.
They should actually, yeah. I don't live there anymore. I can't suggest it, but.
Damn.
But okay, so I feel like I have a personal gripe when it comes to hold selection at a lot of the gyms I've been to in the US. It's just, I feel like maybe they started the gyms like before really cool holds became a thing. And so then they just have like really boring
holds.
That's
such a nice burn.
And then they. Well, this is like my point of view from someone who isn't involved in like the gym, I don't know, industry. But I just feel like they have a lot of uninteresting holds and then they don't really have the money right now to like buy cooler macros and stuff like that.
It seems like they mostly buy US brands with the exception of Flat Hold perhaps and maybe Cheetah. But from what I see, it seems to be all US brands, all PU, and really not many volumes. But that I'm sure that's changing. But when you go to Europe or Japan or the rest of the world, you'll see lots of volumes, lots of tiny, tiny footholds. And I think there's maybe way more of like a techie style than in the US. Yeah, it's an interesting observation.
Okay, so it's just like a hold distributor kind of thing?
It's a hold distributor and also like a hold factory problem. You got to see like, I think the amount of gyms in the US, I think it's maybe like 550, maybe 700 gyms. I think that's like more or less like the amount of gyms we have in Germany. I think we have 600 gyms. Maybe US has a little bit more.
Wow.
But it's like Germany. Wow. So the amount of gyms... Like even if it was Germany and the UK, it's not cooperating like Italy, France, Spain. Like it's not as big as a European market. I think in the US, there's only two productions, maybe three. There's Aragon, and they produce for Kilter and a few other brands. And then there's another one. I think they produce for I don't know the names anymore. But it's like mainly American brands, and I talked to a few people from the United States, and like if they want to order holds from Europe, they always have to talk to the distributors, and the distributors they compile orders until the shipping container is full, and then they gotta wait like for weeks and months until the stuff comes over. I don't know how big their orders are, and the thing is, a lot of Americans make fun of us that we're using polyester. Like they think like we're dumb and we're like lost in time. Bad words. You might think, yeah, like feel free to think that, but like our gyms work pretty well and the setting still works pretty well and we don't destroy our polyester holds. You cannot make everything out of a polyester hold what you can make with a polyurethane hold. But polyester, like we have more factories, it produces way faster, it lasts way longer. So we have way more different shapes here, way more, because we, plus all the polyurethane brands, and I think we have way more factories here as well. We got Schlumberger in Slovenia, we got 360 in Slovenia, we got Composite X in Bulgaria, we got the Blocks one in Germany, and I think there's more, maybe there's more. And then we got like all these plywood brands, like we got so many plywood productions, while the American brands, I think there's Dimension, which is kind of okay. And then they're still importing blocks, like the majority of plywood volumes comes from Germany, which is super embarrassing, honestly, because but it's difficult for us to say because we are not, like Jake visited 3 to 4 gyms, I visited 3 to 4 gyms, and I had mainly like a lot of weird experiences as well, because I think
let's put it this way, like the spaces were so big, they could be much better. Yeah, yeah. Like I climbed in a gym like 300 ball up problems, and I think there was maybe one push. It's like the dimensions of like the variety of setting or movement styles. And that's a problem. It's not down to the holds, but holds can be inspiring, I think, for most of the people, for most of the setters to make it better.
Seems like the walls are restricted by a couple of things. One is lack of volumes for me. And the other one is not committing to using screw-ons. Like everything seems to be a bolt-on. And I don't know if you've noticed that or if that's even fully true, but from what I saw in the walls I went to, most holds were bolted on. And I think you can do way more with lots of jibs and volumes than you can with just bolt-on holds.
But this might be also like historical, because the one of the first polyurethane brands was Technique in the States. And nowadays, if you order Technique jibs, they're still not pre-drilled. So like there's a historical part that you get a climbing hold, even though if it's a bigger hold, and you have to screw your own like anti-rotation screw in it, which is like liability-wise in Germany, that wouldn't even like be legal, like to offer holds which have like which can rotate, because they have they can rotate easily, and you need to put a pin screw in it. And in Germany or like Europe, it's designed that you kind of like have a thread where the screw goes into to stop a hold from rotating.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
Like in the factory molds and produces holds like this, and a lot of polyurethane holds in the US don't have that. So maybe it's like historical wise that they don't do a lot of jibbing. Like commercially wise,
Ginny, you said you're missing certain holds. You're missing like cool holds. What do you think exactly? Do you think you're missing?
Oh,
is there anything you can think of?
Oh, I'm just going based off of vibes here.
Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. I don't have like a route setter's eye for this, so I don't keep track of holds that closely. It's just that it's rare for me to like I don't even see a lot of dual text holds really. It's just like I feel kind of embarrassed talking about it because I don't know the terminology.
Trust me, a lot of the holds are
like not grippy. And it's just like this shitty, like slick plastic sometimes.
Exactly. That's because
it's
PU.
Which is also fine. Oh, okay.
That's because it's PU and most of it's like already 3 years old. As soon as it's 3 years old or even 2 years old, it's basically useless.
And some of these holds come out of the factory like this. And I talked to some people, setters, gym owners, managers, climbers in the US, and they're like, we don't have slippy holds. And I'm like, this is not possible. My only explanation can be, okay, these people never touched like a hold with a lot of grip. Like we have climbing holds which have grip like fiberglass macros from Flat Hold or Cheetah. This is like how our normal holds can feel. And yeah, but it's cool that you, yeah, slippery. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not cool.
But I mean, I guess you can say it like makes you stronger. So that's good
potentially.
Too, in
but
a
it,
way.
Is it satisfying to climb on that? I'm not sure.
No, it sucks. Because you just want to do the move, but then it's so like...
In the UK, when it's cold and you have like really dry skin and you try and pull on polyurethane like plastic holes, oh my God, it's sometimes literally not possible. So in America, like you're in San Diego, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So it's basically never cold. So maybe this is why...
I feel kind of cold right now, but okay.
What temperature is it? Like 20 degrees? 15 degrees?
I don't speak Celsius, but it's 65.
I have no idea what that is. My theory was going to be...
This isn't just a San Diego thing. This is just like gyms around the US.
Yeah. My theory was going to be that if your skin is warm, then you're more likely to be able to climb on this like worn plastic.
Mm-hmm. That's 18 degrees.
Oh, dude, 18. It's pretty nice. 18 degrees is lovely.
It's nice.
I don't know. I think maybe you'll see like a retexturing revolution in the States.
No, I mean, I think the gyms here are, well, they're, I would love for you guys to like come here and like tell me everything that's wrong with it so it can ruin my experience.
That's just personal opinions also.
I would be curious your thoughts because I haven't really climbed in too many gyms internationally. I guess like Singapore, a little bit in China, a little bit in France like a few years ago, but I didn't really experience a lot of it.
Yeah, it would be cool for you to come to Europe. I think you'll see a very big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these country-specific setting, what was the word? Not trends, but identities. Identities. You said identities, yeah. Do you feel like any of those identities transfer over to the World Cups, or does it seem like they kind of keep it pretty consistent across the World Cups in different countries?
Yeah, I think... That's my main critique. It does not really, like, the World Cups are same. The World Cups don't feel like they have their own identity. Did we talk about it last time on this podcast? If not, I can rant on.
Nikki, we spoke about this on our podcast, and this is such a good point. Carry on.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I think the World Cups are same but different. Like, walls look the same. Like, you don't have any... If you just watch a World Cup, any of it, if it's Innsbruck, Brixen... Prague, whatsoever. Sometimes they're outside, most of the times to get a bigger audience in. But the holes are mainly the same because we're restricting and limiting ourselves to IFSC gold and platinum and premium and whatsoever crap categories. So it's like four main brands like at the Olympic Games and then like maybe 10 for the World Cups or whatsoever. But it's same wall design, same holes all over the world. And then the setting teams, of course, like we always have like IFSC setters plus like a few national setters. But I don't think the national setters bring enough identity from the nations always to make the World Cup look and feel like entirely different between like United States and Europe. And I think it would be super cool if we, for example, had like, okay, we're going to the United States, like tennis, for example. Okay, now I'm on. So tennis, we got the Australian Open now, hard court. Then we're moving on to French Open, the surfaces, sand, clay. Then we're moving on to Wimbledon, which is grass court, which is not fair. It plays like the same rules, but it plays like different speed, balls bounce differently, different techniques, blah, blah, blah. Then we're going back to hard court with the US Open. But, and for climbing, in my opinion, it would be super cool. For example, we start the season in China. We got like 80% of the holes are Chinese holes, Chinese wall design. We have mainly Chinese setters, maybe a few IFSC setters to be there for the level and take care of that the styles are, that it's like a well-catered round and they know the athletes. But then it feels like you're going to China and maybe you've seen the holes, maybe not, but it feels like really Chinese. I don't know what Chinese climbing style could be, but for sure, if you go, for example, to the United States, like there used to be comps like, I don't know, like all this Dark Horse series from the early 2010s. Wait. Or before that, like super powerful
even Vail.
Climbing. Vail, yeah, like the early Vail stuff, like 360s on two finger pockets, big, like huge open pinches, like super steep climbing, powerful climbing, like longer boulders, more moves. It looked like very American vaults, like 6 meter high, and you're like, oh, what the fuck? If I fall now, I might die. I don't give. It's just like a different experience compared to another country. That would be super cool because it's also cool for storytelling. Like football, for example, until 2014, whenever there was like a football world championship in South America, it was always South American teams winning. So imagine you have a Japanese World Cup on Japanese brands set by Japanese setters in Japan. It could be like a cool story. Like, will we ever see someone winning a Japanese World Cup who's not from Japan? Stuff like this. Like, if every World Cup feels entirely different. And I don't know whether the nations would be able to have like a certain style, but if I take a look at French root setting, of course, they have steep stuff and funky stuff, but like, and the, like with their French spices, like maybe like not even like really steep walls needed. They could set a French World Cup style on vertical slabby walls. Would be so cool, like so different to see with French brands, French setters. Just like, that would be really distinctive. But I think nowadays it's not distinctive.
I think you nailed that. I think basically the message is standardization is bad. Standardization of holds, standardization of wall, all of that's coming in now, and we're not going to see as much variety as we used to have.
And so if we like did an American World Cup, it would just be like shitty PU holds, and then that's what we'd want to see.
Why not? Like, why not? It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Or, just really
or the
different.
Other thing, what might happen is we go so far down the standardization route that we end up setting exactly the same boulder for each round. And you just test yourself on the same boulder across the season. It would be super boring.
Yeah, I think we're going there. Well, like, it feels like we're going there. We standardize walls, setting teams, holes. Then you can also like make up 20. Imagine you make up like 20 different boulder problems pre-season. Everyone knows the boulder problems. You have their preset, and then they're like wildly. They have different difficulty gradings. Like if you do jumping, diving, Olympic sports, you do like too salty, you get a 2.8, and then it's just like how you execute it or how fast you execute it. Acrobatics as well. Like, there are different kind of stuff you can do and different ratings you get for it. So you could have like 20 or 30 pre-med boulder problems. People know the boulder problems. And then they get wildly picked. So you never know, like randomly picked for each round. And then it's like, Jake again on the slab 3 months ago in Vail. He didn't have a good time on the slab, but maybe this time here in Paris, did he train for the slab? You know, like then it would be at least like a little bit like historical wise, or like you could easily compare training footage and training experiences to real comp experience. It would be utterly boring. But it would also make sense the way the whole stuff is happening right now, because for being an Olympic sport, it's nicer to have something to talk about and something which is like really easy to compare. And if you can just say, Jeannie again on the triple dyno, category 3 out of 4, she had a training camp. Let's take a look at the clip from her and the training camp. Mm. Then we see some footage of you training in Salt Lake. Then you're there in Prague on the marketplace, and you're like, okay, second try, she did it. So apparently she trained really hard. This is category 3 out of 4. She gets that many points, and everyone believes, I understand that. Makes sense.
Okay.
This could be a way. I'm pretty sure like we're going there somehow.
Yeah, because I mean, we kind of get a little bit of that with them setting different-ish variations of the same moves with all the liches and stuff like that. But
you're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this. Even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
Okay. So outside of, I guess, World Cup stuff, what are some of the favorite comps that you have set for? Style-wise or competition format-wise?
I don't think I've set a weird format recently. Recent comps I've done that I really enjoyed is we have a comp in London called Brawl on the Wall. In November every year. That's a sick comp. That's just in its third year, so it's in its infancy. It's getting bigger every year. That's gonna be big soon. It's gonna be like the Quiff of the South. Do you know Quiff?
Yeah, I've watched that. Well, I also saw Brawl on the Wall. I was going to ask you a little bit about that if you wanted to get into it. Please excuse this brief intermission, but if you're interested in deleted scenes from this episode where I get grilled on my definition of a pro climber and we do more gym trash talking, do consider helping support this podcast on Patreon. Some other perks include a membership pin shipped to you after 2 months, prioritized guest questions, or the ability to submit video questions, and much more to come. The proceeds go back into the podcast to help me break even, and they help me improve the experience of the guests. If you'd like to help out non-monetarily, liking, commenting, and sharing helps a great deal as well. Back to the show.
Yeah, sure. Brawl's cool. Brawl's like our attempt at bringing the international athletes into London for a big comp.
Well, yeah. So like, what is the difference between that and Quiff?
There, in terms of the format, there's basically no difference. Quiff just has a legacy. It's been going for, I don't know, how long's Quiff been going? 15 years at least? Long time. But I think perhaps Quiff is sort of, I feel like Quiff is becoming old. It's starting to taper off now. And maybe London is the future of big comps in the UK. I hope. Let's see. But it was always Quiff, Doc Masters, and Studio Block Masters is like the comps for international athletes before the start of the season. And Brawl on the Wall is sort of that, but after the season.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were some like pretty big names there, like Toby and Aaron. But I feel like there were also some other competitors who were maybe, I mean, still really good, but like more like local climbers kind of.
Yeah.
How do you set something that's hard enough for like Olympians, but not so hard that they can manage it during their training season, and also like something that's not too challenging for people who are more like local climbers?
Wow. To set for the two different ability levels, you just have multiple rounds, qualies, semis, and finals, and then eventually they get weeded out. But you can always make people fall off in 4 minutes. Even Toby, even Aaron, you just put them on a slab, give them a bad foothold. There's lots of tricks, and it's kind of infinite to explain. But making them fall off is kind of okay. It's kind of fine. You find your personal limit, and then you go like way harder. And it's a like an experience thing. So I've set for Toby quite a lot now. I know roughly how good he is, and that's outrageously good. You know, there's a group of setters who all know the level. So you sort of you educated guess it
based on the vibes.
Based on vibes, based on experience and understanding of their level. Yeah, but the thing about setting for both Toby and like local wads. Slab is a really good example. You can use slab to level the playing field. Like a local Londoner and Toby could have a similar experience on a really hard slab. But for example, with a power boulder, like Toby will always have a major advantage. He's just ridiculously strong. It's super hard to set for both abilities.
But a coordination boulder, for example, would also work. That someone who's like really into funky flowy moves would have like a chance to feel what Toby is doing there. He's pretty good, but he's not like the best in coordination, for example, like running boulders.
I guess that's true.
But in general, like all these, like who was on the team, Jake? Like the setting team, because there's always like IFSC setters, at least like one or two like included.
Jan Janu, he's chiefed lots of lead World Cups, and he's chiefed a couple Boulder World Cups. He was on the team, so he has a really good understanding. And then Matt VC, he's in charge. He's an incredibly strong guy. You know, it was a good team, strong team.
Yeah, there were also some like really cool light upholds. How did those work? Like, how did you hook them up?
They were, they were transparent holds from AG holds.
Oh, okay,
and,
yeah.
In China. And VC spent like a day just lining the inside with just LED strips. It's pretty lo-fi, but it worked quite well.
Yeah, are we going to see those in the World Cups?
I mean, maybe. So. Why not?
Light up stuff.
Yeah, why not?
I think they're not organized enough.
I thought they were like one of the World Cup hold manufacturers now.
Yeah, like you might be able to see. Might be able to see like the transparent holds, but nothing with a backlight. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
What I mean.
I vote for that going forward, though. If we want to make World Cups more of a spectacle, why not light things up?
Fire, like concerts. We need more fire, more laser, more fog machine, and smoke machine. Yeah, more pyrotechnic. Yeah, but people are a little bit too afraid, I think. But it would be so cool. You top out and you get like the fountain of fire.
Or just straight up fireworks. Well, like men's and women's four fireworks. Why not?
Yeah. And especially you could blast it out of the wall because you know like where the climbers are. Yeah. It's like you can take this powder and you can keep it behind the wall and then blast it like with a leaf blower out. I tried it already. And then you can put a smoke machine, fog machine. Like, yeah, there's like indefinite like options to make climbing a little bit appear better. But like, yeah, I think, yeah.
Well, it sounds expensive, but yeah. Well, I feel like there was a comp back in the day where once someone topped out or maybe they got the top, it would like blow like smoke or something like that.
Yeah, maybe Adidas Rockstars had that when they hit the buzzer. It was like,
oh yeah, yeah, okay, that, yeah.
We could do a break-off series basically. Like there should be the World Cup, which is like standardized and whatever. It can do what it wants. It can stay serious, and then there should be a breakaway series, that's kind of chaos.
Yeah, if I was a billionaire, I would do this.
Yeah, the issue is that it's expensive.
We need like Saudi. We need Saudi investment.
we need the oil money.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll ask. But I think in general, like in Europe, we have more and more comps like which are like pre-IFSC or after IFSC, like really invitational comps. Like in Belgium, there was the other one. And next year we will have, in January, we'll go to Doc Masters. Then there's Quiff in March, and then there's Studio Block Masters in March. And they all have an open invitational format where everyone climbs on the same boulders, more or less, like the stars, like the pros. And then it goes into semis and finals.
Does that concept exist in the States? Like regular gym goers climbing alongside like Natalia and Brooke?
I haven't heard of it. No, I don't think I've really seen it. Because if I'd seen it, I would definitely go.
Maybe it's because America's so spread out. Sorry.
Boulder Project, Seattle. Wait, or was it Minneapolis? Like Nick told me, they are going to do a big comp series, and I think it's like over multiple weeks, multiple stations, and then there's a big round off. And someone from Canada, I think it was Caleb, also told me that in Canada they have a lot of like, there's like a comp season after the IFSC season, or maybe before, like then Canada, multiple different comps, like over, yeah, like multiple gyms, always like follow up each weekend or after a fortnight. A lot of people spend a lot of time there to make money. I think it was Caleb. No, I'm pretty sure it was Canada, Montreal, and stuff like that. Ooh, someone back me up here, please.
I don't know. Haven't heard of that one either.
Okay, I'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, Bouldering Project, I mean, it's not really like a bunch of pros show up. There will be like semi-pros, I guess, that kind of show up to those. But it's usually more of just like a local comp.
Yeah, I was wondering how regular gym goers get to climb with World Cup athletes. And I guess it happens in Europe because of Quiff, Blockmasters, Studio Block.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
architecture. But does it happen in America?
Yeah. But I think your original question, maybe something to add, is like different comp formats. And I think we're going more and more into these like big invitational formats. And there's not much innovation. Well, back in the days, I think they still do it at Rockmasters, like a elimination format. And we used to have it for years, like at our fun comp at my parents' gym. It's great. Like you start with 6 finalists, which all start in boulder number 1. And afterwards, you eliminate 2, which is highly unfair. But in the end, you have only 2 people competing for the title, which is pretty cool. And I think it's a really good format, difficult to set for. And I think my favorite format we ever ran was like hard moves, like a team competition. It's like 7 guys back then and 3 women in a team. And then you try to top as many problems as possible within the whole team. And then people move into a final. And I think we had 6 or 5 cities within the final. It was always like you competed for 1 gym or 1 city. So it's like you know these people. And then in the final, we had 6 boulders, 5 different lanes. And the 6th boulder was hidden, so no one knew like what the 6th boulder, the style was. But then within the final team, it's 6 climbers out of the 10 people. And you have to appoint them like one of these boulders. So like, Jake, this looks like a dino. Do you want to climb the dino or do you want to climb the powerful boulder? So Jake goes to climb the dino. Then you look for the best jack of all trades for boulder number 6, which no one has seen so far. And then, yeah, 3 attempts for everyone. And it was like 7 meters high above water in an inside swimming pool. It was like, because like...
Dude, it was so sick. It with a crowd of like 5,000 people, it was the sickest thing. And now it doesn't exist, man. You should do it again.
It was called Hard Moves. I will send you the YouTube link. It's... No, we're not doing it again. But like,
and how long the qualification phase took, like a month or 2?
Weeks. So like every
6
city,
weeks over.
So the last format, for example, was like you had like 30 gyms qualifying, and it was like, for example, like 6 gyms from Berlin, and then each gym of Berlin had like 60 boulder problems over 4 weeks or 100 boulder problems for 6 weeks. And then you tried to climb as many as possible, top or nothing. That's it. You add all the points and then you make it into the top 10, top 7, male, top 3 women back then. And then these 6 Berlin gyms, they battled out 2 final spots for the super final, which was in another city. So like you climbed with all these people, you had all the sessions with together against another gym, tried to get more points and tops than this gym. Then you went to the super final, meeting like all these other cool cities and people and teams from other cities. And it was like the last edition. Yeah, we had London, we had the Arch, we had Klettercenter from Stockholm. They brought Adam Ondra and Anthony Goulston, stuff like this.
Yeah, it was so cool. And you had some Swiss walls.
Yeah, Swiss, Belgium gyms, Dutch gyms, German gyms. So it was pretty international. And then like in the swim opera, was dope because it's like a team event. It's like way more. And that like you have these climbers, but you also have like people who climb in the qualification phase. They're sitting in the audience and they're just like cheering you on. It's like way more personal if you see someone who's like, yeah, I know this dude. And he climbs within a team like with Jule Worm or like with Adam Ondra within a team because like you don't have, yeah, if you're lucky and you're really, really good, you can make it still like into the team. And I think that's pretty cool.
This could be done on an international level, like USA versus Germany versus Japan. Can you imagine that? It would be so sick. And then it could also be like a series, like you do 5 or 6 events in a year. The organization would be astronomical, but that would be cool, man.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It also works. Like I tried it 2 years ago in the Netherlands. We did it at a gym, Ropo in Groningen. So we did a normal qualification phase, I think 40 qualification boulders. Everyone climbed as many as possible, and people didn't know how the finals worked. And then we had the first top
the first 8 men and the first 8 women, and then they got mixed together crosswise into teams by 4, and we only had 4 final boulders. And then we had all these teams, and then they climbed together, and they also were like, okay, Ginny, this looks probably like a good roof boulder for you. Do you want to do this? And it was super cool because, again, the crowd is super involved and you're climbing within a team, especially like smaller local comps. If people are not really used to a lot of competitions, it can be like super, they can be nervous, like it can be super intimidating to climb in a final. And like this, everyone's like a little bit like encouraged to try really hard and to do it like it's more like a communal thing. So it works if you really want to do it.
So then, Nikki, any comps you've really enjoyed setting for recently?
Yeah, Nikki.
No.
Oh, sad.
I'm so done with comps. I'm so done. I don't know. I can't identify myself with it anymore. Like I it's so difficult for me because I don't know the people. I also don't care that much about the people anymore. Like the comp climbers. I don't know. I'm not at that level. I just don't care anymore. I'm over it. I think I'm really done with it. So I'm just mainly filming. Yeah. I don't think I will set a comp next year.
Whoa, that's not possible.
It is. Why not?
What if I invite you to hang?
Yeah, okay. because it's you.
Did you have like a particularly bad experience, or just like slowly over time you aren't enjoying it as much anymore?
Just slowly over it. Like I'm in no physical state that I can feel like anywhere close to it anymore. Like not even on slabs or vertical walls anymore. And I just don't care. Like I've seen too many comps, set too many comps. It's just like it doesn't matter. So it sounds like really nihilistic, but it's just like there's nothing new. It's just utter boring, and it's always like wasting a complete weekend. So I like it when we do it in London because it's with our friends and whatever. Like I'm visiting friends and family. But on the other, and it's a really spoiled and privileged point of view. But I've been part of comms and watching comms now since like over 20 years. So it's okay. Yeah. And there are a lot of people who have a lot of fire for it, who think like they know how it works and okay, if we do this, this happens. And from my experience, like there's so much luck involved.
It's always a roll of the dice. And if you do anything for a certain amount of time, you get jaded, you get bored of it. You've seen everything you can possibly see. So you move on to the next thing. And if I can speak for you, Nikki, I think Nikki is in his phase where he's trying to give beginner climbers or lower ability climbers the best possible experience. Like Nikki's really keen on setting accessible stuff nowadays. And I think maybe that's always been true, but especially now, and like teaching people the fundamentals of climbing and setting generally, comps are really exclusive. They're only for the top 1 or 2% of people. Like it's better to give back to the 99%, I think.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm in it for the 1% at the moment, but I'll be like Nikki in a few years. Yeah.
So then going forward, Nikki, you mentioned you'll be doing workshops at the Frankenjura Academy. Are these workshops for setters or?
Yeah. So over the last few years, I've done like a lot of workshops internationally, nationally, and it's mainly like going into gyms and doing like in-house workshops for the gyms when they have an existing team, they got problems on their day-to-day basis, or I rented existing gym walls and then invited setters from everywhere to participate in workshops. And these workshops are, and now we found a space, a Frankenjura Academy in Forchheim, close to Nuremberg in the Frankenjura in Germany, which offers like the possibilities for lead and boulder setting to host workshops from a basic level for beginners, people who have never set before, who want to get into setting or who just want to try it for one day, people who are already setting commercially or comp-wise. We will run commercial setting classes, comp setting classes, new school setting, and hopefully also like sooner or later some mentoring about like how for headsetters or for other people, because we need spaces like this. People cannot experiment enough anymore. And it's like the gym is closed when you do stuff. There are no customers around. We have all the materials, all the holes, all the walls and volumes just to play around. And I hope, yeah, this is my next big project, just to share and see like how we can professionalize this and like open more spaces for a lot of people to just play around and learn and experiment. Yeah. And like, but this goes from commercial to comp as well.
I guess in terms of learning and experimenting, it's hard for me to imagine coming up with new moves at this point. How do you imagine setting continuing to innovate?
It's hard for us to imagine as well. I think the material, the holds that are available, generally they set the trend. So I think maybe we'll see way more no-tex, slippery. I think we haven't seen anything of that yet. We'll see a lot more of that in the coming years. Although I don't think it's cool. It's just
different.
It's really easy. Yeah, it's different, and it's like a really easy way to get people to fall off. It's maybe not the best way, but it works, and everyone's in the same boat. I think we'll see a lot more of that. Equipment is the thing that will change, like what holds are available. And then in terms of moves, like I think we'll see bigger combinations. So I don't know, like this time last year, there was a French comp that was jokingly referred to as the French traverse champs. It was like gigantic 20 meter sideways, like paddle dinos, like infinitely super long. I think we might see way more of that. And again, I'm not sure I'm a fan of it, but I don't know.
I hope we will see like some like hardcore moves again, just like three or four moves, like straightforward board climbing. And I'm pretty sure, because like a lot of the IFSC setters right now, I think a lot of them, or like the newer ones who are getting into charge, they want to mix it up again, getting out of the funk and also like show just like raw precision power.
Yeah, I hear they're starting to add back in more strengthy crimp moves.
And they can only do this if it's not the Olympic combined format. They can only do this with one zone. If it's like two zones, they're not allowed to do it because like it has like the style factors. But Sergio and Tsukuru, for example, if you can say some names, they're like pretty good. And I think they want it like a little bit more like pure power and simple boulders.
Like we really want to see it as climbers, as setters, we want to see it. But I'm concerned that the audience won't necessarily understand what's happening. If it's just like four move power boulder, I don't know if the audience will be entertained. So I feel like it might not work, but let's cross our fingers. I want to see that. I want to see mantles. Like when was the last time you saw a really hard
mantle? Yeah.
Like a 2005 mantle on a green blob. That's so sick. Bring it back.
No, you can only do this like with the IFSC World Cup format. You are not allowed to do this with the Olympic qualification or Olympic two zone format. That's a problem.
Yeah.
And some setters need to be like, they need to be willing to risk something in the World Cup format, like only with one zone, to be like, okay, there's two moves, there's a hard jump here, and let me do a mental. And it's for sure like more difficult to guess whether people will be able to climb this or not, or like in how many attempts. Like a funky, flowy parkour, new school stuff, it's always like easier to get more attempts out of it than a pure power problem.
Yeah, pure power is way more risky to set.
Yeah, and to guess how good they are.
Well, also the thing is, I guess if it's just a pure power boulder, then it's quite possible we'll either just see people be able to climb it or not be able to climb it. And it might not be very enjoyable to watch someone get like shut down on something and then they like can't make progress, and it's just 4 minutes of watching someone not be strong enough to do something and they can't get like suddenly stronger in the moment.
Yeah, it could
that's
be.
The thing. It's difficult to see the process. Yeah.
Okay, so we want to see more mantles and maybe power moves. What's a move you're tired of seeing?
Yeah, we want to see more mantles. I'm so incredibly sick of lachets. Like 2023 was the year of the lachet, and oh my God, it's so easy to set and so incredibly useful, and it works so well for comps, but I'm sick of it. No more lachets. Get rid of lachets.
Okay. And I'm sick of the 180 degree turnaround on a slab on this one footer. I'm so sick of it because like, it's always like, okay, first we stand up, then we traverse over. So it's like a lot of horizontal space with nothing. Yeah, I'm so sick of it.
And with that one, especially, once you understand the formula to setting it, it's just this, it's exactly the same every single time. Like maybe the color of the holds change, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So I'd like to see more. Yeah. Like I think we both agree on like powerful, a little bit more simple stuff, but I'd like to see also more like deathy corners or like weird chimney.
Yeah, like a chimney. Chimney.
A chimney would be so cool and mental, like full body, like exhaustion.
Horizontal pressed out, like quarryman style. And imagine that in a World Cup, people's brains would explode. Like traditional climbing techniques, but ultra, ultra hard. That would be cool. In injuries all over the place.
Yeah, elbows fly. But you can present them like way nicer nowadays. You have all this like beautiful material. You can do a lot of like good looking crazy stuff. Yeah.
How do you make a chimney hard enough for a World Cup?
Depends on like how open the corner is. Like if the corner is like really shallow, then it's all of a sudden about flexibility and you could use a lot of like dual techs or like maybe even no techs just to make like every movement pretty, pretty precise and intricate, just like flat stuff. Like you can do it. If you want it, you can do it. For people who haven't seen it, like what Jake was talking about, the Crowryman, Johnny Dawes, Clumbers, like it's like one of the most amazing, probably my dream route, but I should do stretching for this. yeah, but it's like it's an 8-8 chimney corner climb, 8-8 plus route. It's amazing. It's like one of the most amazing climbs in the slates.
So yeah, in the slate quarry in Wales. Oh,
so cool.
Okay, so more chimneys, more mantles, fewer lachets, which I'm okay with because I still haven't really figured out that move. I don't know. It just doesn't work for me.
They won't go away though, unfortunately, because they're so incredibly useful and so easy to set. Maybe we'll see fewer of them eventually, but it's going to take a little while for them to really go. Yeah. What about you?
So yeah, I agree with fewer lachets. I don't think there's been too many 360 moves because I don't think I've actually gotten a chance to try that myself. Moves I want to see more of, I guess not that I actually want to see more of this, but it was really exciting to watch. It was the step up into no-tech's fist jam in the Prague semis.
Yeah,
I hated it, yeah. But it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool. See, it was different. You don't see that all the time. That's good. Difference is like, different stuff, basically. That's what we want.
Yeah, but again, I don't want them to set it a bunch because that will get boring.
Yeah, because if you see too much of it at the World Cup, then people will be jumping into cracks in your local wall, and that's not cool.
Have you set the step up fist jam before?
Or jump into a crack? Yeah, of course. It's horrible. It's painful.
It's horrible. Ami did it the other day in China, like a fist jam, but like in a dual text.
Crack. Oh yeah.
It was like a runner and then throw your fist into a dual text crack, like a shape like a V, and you were sliding right in.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at rss.com.
Actually quite enjoyable, but yeah.
Ugh, agree to disagree on that. So it seems like you both prefer freelance setting, or did you have dreams of becoming World Cup setters one day, or still have that dream?
No, it's already too late for me. I'm 33. I'm old and I'm too weak. So no.
I like how fake realistic you are. You wouldn't be too weak. You would just need to specialize on your special skills. But like, it's good that you're not doing it. Like, I from a friend's perspective, because I get more of you as a friend and you're not like super busy all the time becoming a World Cup setter.
Yeah. I set for the GB team, but even if a World Cup came to the UK, came to Sheffield or London or, you know, Boulder World Cup in the UK, I wouldn't be in with a chance of joining that team. I don't think I'd still be, you know, like eighth or ninth or 10th in line to be that local setter. Five. Well, you look at five, maybe fifth. No. I don't know. Cousins is above me, you know.
Cousins, Matt. Cousins, Max.
Yeah. Yeah, but like Jan. Jan, yeah, Jamie, Nathan. Yeah. All these guys.
Oh, not yet. Yeah. Okay.
How do you get higher on the list? Is it like based on ability or strength or just like knowing the right people?
No, not about how much they. It's not political. It's purely strength and experience. There are just other people who have been doing it longer and are better, probably.
Yeah, we shouldn't say this public that Matt Cousins is a better set on climber than you. We should probably not do this. His ego would
be. The man's an absolute sandbagger. I tried to climb one of his boulders in Yonder the other day after I had my Christmas dinner like 2 days before. It was graded V8 and for sure it was V11, 12 maybe. Super, super hard. The man's a sandbagger. So freelance, yeah. Commercial setting. Yeah, commercial setting or competitions, like lower level competitions, for me are just way more fun. It's just an easier task and there's way more creativity. You can kind of more or less do what you want. More freedom.
The thing I also think about comp setting nowadays, it's not only setting the competition, like getting into setting the competition is super competitive nowadays. It's like I'm part of the organizing team for Studio Blockmasters and just like putting the team together. I get so many messages of people who are like, can I set the finals? Can I set can I come and set and blah, 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 blah. Some of these guys I don't even know. I don't know their qualifications. And then it's like so many experienced good setters who are already setting. So, and who are out there nowadays, it's difficult to find even spots. It was easier like a few years ago, I gotta admit. Yeah, like I was pretty lucky.
Well, Jake, what do you feel like you're missing in terms of skills to become a World Cup setter?
Well, probably I should have been a competitor. I never actually competed. One of the guys who's just become a World Cup setter in the UK, Max Ayrton, he had like 3 or 4 years on the competition circuit, so he has that under his belt. He's also, I think he's only 29 or 30. He's young. Yeah, it's just like loads of time.
Is it more lucrative to do freelance setting? I'm not sure what the pay is like for World Cup setters either.
I don't know.
I think for the Bern World Championship, when they were setting like almost like 18 days in a row, they got like 180 or maybe 200 euros a day. So basically nothing.
Wow,
like
that's
for the
shit.
Job they did.
That's bad.
Shit. Yeah. So I think like for really earning money, you need to be like, maybe the Boulder World Cups nowadays, I think the World Cup itself pays a little bit better. And I think the chief is like paid from Monday till Sunday or Sunday till Sunday. And gets like more money.
How many do you do per year? You know,
that's the thing. Like, even if you get like 500 for a day, like a Boulder World Cup as a chief, and it's like 4,000 after taxes, paying health insurance, travel costs, blah 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 blah. Like, you get travel costs and hotel, but you have to pay for food, and the week afterwards is usually your dad, and the days beforehand. So that's a good question. Like freelance setting, I think it depends on the country.
But like, even if you do like 3 days in a row or like 3 days a week, then you end up in Germany, which is like, which can pay like up to 350 euros. Then you end up with 12 times 350. What's that?
1,050.
Times four. Yeah, it's like 4,200 euros. And in Germany, after taxes, because you get over the tax bracket, like you get like, you pay 40% taxes. Then you didn't pay health insurance yet. You need to take care of that. You find jobs in my opinion, like you can do freelancing for some time, but it's not a longevity thing. Like if you're employed somewhere as a setter and you add some freelance setting from time to time, it's a more sustainable income and way of living. And most of the World Cup setters also have a gym or a headset or somewhere. Sergio, for example, he started now at Arcos because he was like, okay, I want to do more commercial settings again and like have a probably steady income. We didn't talk about the income, but he wanted not only comp setting. Tsukuru, headset at B-Pump. Yeah, I don't know many IFSC setters who are fully freelance. I know more like people, Olga is fully comp setting freelance, but I don't know, like I know more people who are freelancing just commercially than comp setting wise.
In London, for example, I think there are 32 walls now and most of them take freelancers. So if I wanted to, I could probably work 6 days a week, but it's completely unsustainable. Like I'd be burnt out within a month. So I think the potential for it to be lucrative is there, but it never really works out because unless you're a machine, you can't work freelance. You can't set like 5 days a week for a whole year. You'd be broken. It's nice to have it's nice to have like a head setting role as your security, your like backup. Because you can do, you have some time to do some admin work behind the computer, so you can rest.
Yeah, that makes sense. It seems a lot more restful than just selling your physical labor, I guess. Okay, so I also just wanted to touch a bit on your setting podcast, another setting podcast for those who haven't checked it out yet. Have you been enjoying it, and what's the plans for that in the future?
Oh yeah, we have a podcast.
We were on a break. The future, we should do it again, but we were on a break, I think, since before Fontainebleau. Like, we went to Font. When did we go to Font? October.
Oh, October, yeah.
Yeah, then there was November, then I went to China, and then we were super busy the last, because like winter season is always the most busy season for us.
Yeah.
Setting wise and working wise.
Workshops and competitions every single weekend. It's chaos.
Always. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, the podcast will resume once we're back on a regular schedule. I don't know, what, February or January?
We can do it next week, honestly. Like I'm back, like I'm full of energy again. We should talk about our year.
I read somewhere that if we put out 21 podcasts or more, then we've made it into the 1% group. Only 1% make it that far. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think we've done 9 now, Nikki, or 10.
We have to keep on pushing. But it's basically just us talking. Sometimes we invite friends just to talk about route setting and sports and our life. We don't do that much technical stuff. Like we start and then we hit record and then we stop and then I upload the stuff. Like I haven't even figured out how to upload it to other streaming platforms outside of Spotify.
I can help you out with that.
The only difficult thing is finding topics. I think we'll run out of topics very quickly. So we need to start bringing in guests.
And I don't think so, Jake. But we also have a lot of guests if we wanted to.
Yeah, I know. The long, long list if we want to. Maybe we should just start talking about other sports.
Love it. Dude, here, did I tell you, there's the Brisbane Open, like tennis starts again. Kyrgios was playing with Djokovic yesterday. I watched the double. It was amazing. And I'm going to watch Australian Open in Melbourne like in 2 weeks. This is my big goal to
nice.
Do. Two. We should go to Wimbledon again. Maybe check out French Open.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've got goals.
Okay.
I would not necessarily recommend adding a bunch of guests. Scheduling is kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Lots setup time.
Yeah, it's not so simple. Okay, so that wraps it up for all the questions I had. Let's move into some of the Discord questions. First one, why is it so rare for gyms to have footwork intense climbs when that style is pretty prevalent outside? Is it just that the trends are more dynamic climbing, or is there some fundamental thing that makes footwork climbs particularly difficult to set?
Who asked this?
Come to Europe. This is clearly an American asking this question.
Actually, yeah, you're right. Wow. It's that obvious.
And this comes down probably like to the holds, because we have like indefinite amounts of bad footholds, and we have an indefinite amount of good slabs, also indefinite amounts of plywood volumes, which are functional and tapered in, again, indefinite amount of angles. So we have a lot of like nasty footwork, balancy footwork, and all the grades in majority of gyms.
Like if you don't have volumes and you don't have small footholds, and none of your setters I'm being really general here, but let's say most of the setters in the US don't have any experience of slab climbing, or like proper slab climbing, then they will never set it. There's no opportunity to set it. So that's why you don't see it as much. But if you come to Germany, France, UK, you'll see loads of it. We love setting it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people like probably if they have a slab to utilize the place of a slab, sometimes setters destroy it with a second or third draft. If you have something really balancy, you need to be close to the wall. And maybe this is like more for the setters out there. So you set like the first slab boulder, then you test it, or roughly, so you know where you can put stuff and cannot put stuff. Imagine it as green zones where you can put holds or volumes in the second round, which don't disturb like the first boulder of your first round. And then you can create difficult, balancy stuff without there having any protruding, chesty holds in the way, which throw you off the wall. But it's like utilizing the stuff which you have. And if you don't have like a lot of like small footholds, then you can still create like balancy stuff with big, slopey, tapered footholds, but you need to find the right angle and right wall.
So then what do we Americans need to do to get footwork intense climbs?
They need to be aware of it and need to commit to it, and they can try to talk to their setting teams. I think it's always worth like not be like, oh, this is shit, but more like, hey, maybe you could try to, focus on like balancing stuff like in the next slab or vertical wall set. Yeah. Maybe they don't even know that they don't have that in their gyms. A lot of people are not aware of how their gyms are designed or what they cater to. Not even like...
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
A lot of setters. Yeah, they're pretty oblivious to what's happening around them.
All right, so next question. When trying to force a movement or when trying to develop a new move, how important are the holds available? Can you make do most of the time, or will you abandon the idea if the hold you need isn't at the gym or doesn't exist yet?
Wow, tricky. The equipment available is incredibly important, but if you have the experience and the understanding of how... the physics of climbing works, like you go from a stable position to an unstable position to a stable position again. If you understand that, you can probably get by with most equipment. But there are certain things, like really radical things, where you might need some dual texture.
It's also time and place, like how much time, like question is like how much time do you have to encourage to force the move? Is it like restricted to a difficulty level? Like, are you trying to create like a triple dyno in 5A, which is impossible? And do you have like the right walls and angles?
So these are like three questions before. Then you can start experimenting. And then if you don't have the resources, like means, holds, volumes, macros, whatsoever, then can be difficult, up to impossible. And I think that's why we see a lot of like jibbing, like putting plastic onto plastic or plastic onto fiberglass. They do it in the World Cups because they have a restricted amount of time, but also resources slash holds and whatsoever. So they need to force a move and they just need to construct things. It's just like, yeah, construction time, like on a, yeah, and like build stuff. And a lot of people do this in commercial setting as well. And it's maybe the fastest way sometimes to achieve stuff, but it damages your material. So always talk to the gym owners, headsetter, whatsoever. The main question was whether it's possible always like without the material to force something.
Yeah, if you can force moves without a certain hold or if you would abandon the idea.
Well, it makes it easier. And if you have a lot of time, maybe you might achieve it with really not that good material, but maybe it's impossible. Not every move works with every material in every angle. Yeah. The more stuff you have and the more time you have, the easier it is to get there.
So then is there a hold that you think doesn't exist yet that should exist?
No.
It's all out there.
So I'm part of a hold company and I can say, like, after looking at this trade show again, what we're doing is basically a lot of like waste plastic pollution. Like so many of our holds have like the same function, same visuals whatsoever. There's not enough functionality. There's a lot of like just too much dual techs. For example, if there's like someone out there who knows the shaper of Pusher, who created like the biggest macro with like the biggest taper. So the concept of dual techs, for example, is that you have the shiny surface, which is slippery, so you cannot grab it or stand on it. Then from Pusher, I say it again, Pusher, produced like in China, the fiberglass volume has a sloper, which is like 20 or 30 centimeters wide, maybe 20 centimeters deep, but then it has like more than, or like maybe a meter of taper of dual techs, which you cannot use. So you could use way less dual techs, way less like plastic and material to achieve the same effect. Maybe it doesn't look as good. And there's a lot of stuff out there which just like doesn't make sense, which just looks good, which takes a lot of space off the wall, which is just crap, in my opinion.
And just to add to that rant, that hold in particular, it doesn't even taper. Where the dual techs, or where the no techs meets the wall, it's like a 90 degree angle, and you can, it's like maybe 3 centimeters deep. You could just grab that thing. It's basically a joke. It's fucking dumb.
Pressure holds.
Mind my language.
I'll leave a link in the description for people to take a look at what hold we're talking about. If they're curious what hold this is. I've never seen it before, so it's not here at least. Okay, so last question. What makes a good beginner dyno or parkour-focused boulder? Or what do you consider the jug ladder of parkour routes?
That's a great question. What do I consider the jug ladder of parkour routes? So I think a really good new school parkour route boulder is accessible, easy to learn, or like accessible, easy to repeat. So you can try to learn it again and again. Well, have the experience, so it's like comfortable, doesn't hurt whether you do it or you fail, and it gives you a feeling of satisfaction once you did the move. Maybe something like unexpected happens, so your whole body moves and you never thought about this, that you might be able to do this, like the easiest triple dyno or a sideways step into a foot plant. Or a really, really easy toe catch, like in our last Foundations of New School workshop, we had unexpected, really, really easy toe catches, which the setter never set, never climbed, and then all of a sudden, like, poof, oh, that's so cool. This would be, yeah, jug ladder, do you want to? Yeah, maybe the
jug ladder.
Easy toe catch might be like way easier to achieve than a lot of people think it might be. And it's also like way easier than people might think toe catch can be.
Or perhaps an easy foot plant is very, very simple to set and also sometimes super mind-blowing for the climber.
But very satisfying.
Yeah, so satisfying. But like a two-part paddle dyno can never be the jug ladder equivalent.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. What about jug ladder in the sense that maybe it's like uninspired or too simple or boring?
Maybe a runner, just like left runner into a side pole sometimes, or like not into a side pole, that's the thing, runner to the left or right, just like horizontal runner, but then you end up in a jug which is just like horizontal. Like in general we say don't tilt your holds like in a horizontal way, because then the directional force is just vertical down and you start pulling, and you never need to find like the perfect position, the sweet spot to hold the move or to hold the hold. Like as soon as, that's the thing about the jug ladder, like it's really forgiving because you just pull down like an ogre and you're like stomp. But you don't have like any experience of moving, or like it doesn't create any feelings except for your legs and your biceps.
Yeah, you don't have to find a position. The position is just there. It just happens automatically. It's the satisfaction comes from finding the position.
Yeah, and we're talking a lot about like finesse or technique or feelings here, and it might be difficult if you've never climbed in a gym which has climbs like this. And there are climbs, like gyms like this out there, which are mainly physical pulling and don't have like this sweet spot of technique and flow or like body positioning. And they have, like you can do this. It's just our personal opinion, I think, that we don't prefer a simple or single-minded physical gym. Yeah, but there's nothing wrong about the places itself.
No, yeah, I have heard that before. I took like a beginner route setting workshop before, and I think I remember the instructor talking about like this beginner setter's trap of wanting to make every hold horizontal, and I would totally fall into that trap, I think. I'm just like, I'm not creative enough in that way.
It's crazy how much things change if you tilt a hold like 45 degrees one way or 45 degrees another way.
Yeah, way different.
Worlds of opportunity.
Okay, well, that's all the questions I had then. Any last minute words of wisdom you want to get out there?
Words of wisdom, spit it.
Enjoy climbing. Don't climb for the number, climb for the fun of it.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Like I spend a lot of time on Reddit for all the Ask Me and like for the good stories, but sometimes I see like climbers like, okay, this is a V5 in my gym. Would this be a V4 or V6 in your gym? We don't know anything about the grading in your gym and whether it relates to what kind of reality. Every bouldering area is graded slightly different. Every gym is slightly different. So we always say like the difficulty should be just relative within your gym. So it should be consistent within your gym. In Europe, a lot of gyms, or we at least, we steer away from outdoor climbing grades on the tags, because indoors is not outdoors, doesn't make sense. So you can also put like 1 to 10 on it, or A to G, whatever, no one cares. It's just like to show like different levels within your gym. So don't care about the rating. Don't care about any kind of plateaus. It's just like happens, then do something else, do another kind of climb. Just like enjoy climbing and don't take it too serious. It's just plastic. It's plastic holes on the wall. It's cool to meet people, spend time with them, do some stuff for your body, but don't take it too serious.
Wise words.
Very insightful. All right. Well, thank you guys for joining me today. Want to let people know where they can find you?
What's the podcast called?
So our podcast is called Another Setting Podcast, because we usually talk about setting and sports. So if you want to get like an insight into route setting and into our minds, it's called Another Setting Podcast. I have a YouTube channel. It's called Beta Route Setting. Jake has a YouTube channel, or is part of a YouTube channel.
Yeah, you can find me on Bouldering Bobat. You can also find me on my Instagram, Jake R. Mason. That's all I got.
What's my Instagram? Schnicklas.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Follow for follow, Jake. Follow for follow. Yeah, that's what we do.
And if you want to learn setting and you're in Europe, check out frankneuracademy.com, because all these root setting workshops are for beginners or people who are already into setting.
And if you want to come and hang out, we'll both be at Dockmasters near Amsterdam and Studio Blockmasters near Frankfurt this year, January and March.
Yeah, we'll be there. Hang out with us. Cool, Jake.
Perfect. Thanks again. Great chatting with you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jenny. Bye.
Thank you so much for making it to the end of the podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you enjoyed. Otherwise, you are a super fake climber. If you're listening on a podcasting platform, I'd appreciate if you rate it 5 stars, and you can continue the discussion on the free competition climbing Discord linked in the description. Thanks again for listening.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.